Hey loves, like you, I desire an abundant life and its lifestyle, and to continue to show up as my best version of self, where we win in life to reclaim, rediscover, redesign an authentic and genuine self. And yes, this is intimacy on a whole new level. Welcome. Join us at claritywithsue.com. Again, that's claritywithsue.com. Welcome to the good life. Welcome aboard the Sue train. Good morning, everybody. Pacific Northwest. We got Mexico. We got Spain. We've got Canada. To all of our listeners, thank you so much for tuning in, tapping in, getting turned on, getting all those mental juices and those heart valves a pumping and opening your heart and showing up to be a better and greater self, more expanded. And that's why I do this. And it's to bring all these incredible guests to the forefront so we can learn and educate not only for myself, but also for all of you and to love on me and the guests as well. And we've got a pretty, I say this every week because I'm pretty excited with all the guests that come on. But just a reminder, if you are in the Pacific Northwest listening to us live, wonderful. If you want to join us on YouTube, we'd love to see you over there as well. All you got to do is just go to YouTube and type in 1150 AM. If you want a copy of the show, please go to claritywithsue.com and get the newsletter. We'd love to hear from you. And after the show, it goes to the podcast world. I want 5, 6, 7, 8 stars. Follow us. That helps to support me and my listeners and potential sponsors and all that good juicy stuff. So it's a win-win-win. So you can get all that information on my website. Wanted to remind all of you about social medias. I guess you could get all that on my website as well. I'm not going to go into that. I'd rather go into educating and loving on all of you with the guests. Melissa Moore is going to be joining us today, and I've got to tell you a little bit about Melissa. She has dedicated her adult life to teaching the tenets of Buddhism and contemplative psychology. I'm going to get into this contemplative psychology, helping students better manage their emotions, explore the notion of intrinsic health, and understands their interconnected nodule nature. Ooh, those are some big words. She's also co-founder of the Karuna Training, and that is a certification in contemplative psychology. And she is going to be joining us today. Melissa, welcome.
Thank you.
Hi, welcome.
Hi.
I just flew my earbuds out. I'm excited. I'd love to just jump in. You know, I do the formal bio and my audience knows this. I also want to, and we want to hear from you. We want to know your why, how this all started for you. I know you've been doing this for many years and I'd love to hear your why and how it all got started. And then we'll jump into the nuts and bolts and some other good stuff.
Why? Thank you for having me. Why? That's always such an interesting question, because I have to say I wasn't very intentional when I stumbled into contemplative psychology. I was just following my impulses, to be honest, and went to Boulder, Colorado when I was about 24 and discovered a whole teaching community with a Tibetan teacher who had come over from, you know, escaped Tibet and landed in the United States in the 60s. And so his community was fairly well established when I arrived there in Boulder. And Naropa Institute at the time, which is now Naropa University, was happening with colorful figures like Allen Ginsberg and Peter Orlovsky and Trungpa Rinpoche and many of these spiritual teachers of the time. And I wasn't all that interested, really, in Buddhism.
Yes.
That's what's true. I was interested in dance, and Naropa had a very strong art component. So I went and studied dance originally there. I went to a dance class, and then I needed to go there. I just knew in my heart I wanted to go. To justify it, I went into the contemplative psychotherapy program because I already had a BA. So I went in and got my master's degree, and then The program was very unusual. It was very experiential. You learned to meditate. It was like basically entering a Buddhist path. And there was a lot of meditation, hours and hours of it, which for me at the time, I now know that I carried in a lot of trauma with me, and it was unprocessed trauma. So it was very hard for me to learn to meditate. So I'm very sympathetic to people who struggle with meditation, because sometimes when we haven't made friends with ourselves, it's so hard to sit with ourselves. So I battled that for the first 8 years of being in the community. And eventually I realized very strongly that wherever I went, my mind was following me, and that I had to take responsibility for this impulsive personality that I had at the time. I would say I still have it, but it's much more.
I love how you say impulsive personality with in quotations.
Right.
There's other adjectives to describe, isn't there?
That's right. I'm trying to be kind, because often when we're in our 20s, right, we don't know our head from our tail often. Yep. I think it's very different today because people are so informed through the internet. But back then, it was a wild time. And I was just following the happening scene, to be honest. It was happening and I knew it and I could feel it. So I wanted to be part of it. And then it was like walking into the mouth of a crocodile, because it came down around me and I realized that I had to really take responsibility. And I was very, very behaviorally out of control. I had a pretty progressed eating disorder, and I was, you know, I was not making good choices. Let's put it that way.
Oh, I can't resonate with that at all.
Well, I think it's so, you know,
it's
the Western
all wisdom gaining. Come on now.
Right. It is wisdom gaining with a lot of hard knocks along the way. Right. And we can make ourselves really wrong for our behaviors. But I really don't do that, because it just brought me into a path. And now I'm 66. And so I've made this whole life journey. Again, starting to teach contemplative psychology also came out of a bunch of German psychologists coming together and saying, we want this body of work. I had taught an introductory weekend and they were like, we want a whole path.
Let's break down what contemplative psychology is, if we could do that, because there's all, you know, psychotherapy. And this is the juicy stuff I really want to get into, because it's so fascinating to me.
Well, what makes contemplative psychology contemplative is the fact that we work always in the present moment, that everything we need to know and all the access we need and have is happening right now, a moment we often miss. So we have to train ourselves and exercise the muscle on how to come home to ourselves as we are, not to change ourselves as we are, but to come home to ourselves as we are. And the basic tenet of contemplative psychology is that we possess basic sanity, or you could say intrinsic health, no matter what. Even if we have a diagnosis, even if we're dying, even if we're, you know, certifiably crazy, etc., or we have all the history in the world to prove it, within us is a diamond that can be, if we experience it, which isn't always easy, we have to train ourselves to stay with the discomfort, which is where meditation comes in. We begin to befriend that dynamic process within us that is sometimes driving us crazy and making wrong choices, but at the root of it is sanity or health. And so that's something a person has to discover, which is why I have this whole body of teachings called Karuna Training, which takes people through a cohort learning in community. Because we
have to explain cohort, because people don't know.
Cohort means that you stay with the same people in a community for 8 programs, and you move through a process and you study the nature of your mind, how you work with emotions and your habits of mind and your brilliant sanity as it manifests, because we all have it, in our relationship to others through a community process. So it's a very rare opportunity to go very deep. And we use
in Western a container with other people, right?
Right. And we use Western psychological processes because, as you know, most of us Westerners didn't grow up sitting on a meditation cushion, and all the teachings of Tibetan Buddhism can be very exotic unless we make it very practical in our own life, what that means to us. Yes. What does ego mean to us? What does, yes, you know, what does habitual mind mean to us? What does kindness to ourselves mean to us? What is compassion? How does that show up, et cetera? So we move through a sort of recipe, an ancient recipe, thousands of year old recipe on how to cultivate an awakened heart through a group and community over the course of 1.5 to 2 years. Each cohort's a little different depending on where we hold them. And we've held cohorts for the last 30 years all over the world in 9 countries. So magic. Yeah, it's an incredible.
I call that the juicy stuff. That's my adjective to describe as an umbrella. That's the juicy stuff.
It is, because, you know, we're all starving to death to make genuine contact with each other. And we all sit on our devices divided and separate and, you know, scrolling through social media. And yet, yes, we just want to touch hearts. Mm. We just want to, as you say, love one another. That's our resource. That's our greatest diamond. The connection.
The greatest diamond. Yes.
Yeah.
And I love, is that the analogy for the book, The Diamonds? Because there's that analogy, yes, the diamond's such this brilliant thing, but you've got a chunk. You've got lots of hacking to be having to get to that.
Well, you have to have a lot of cooking, right? A lot of cooking to get to the diamond, right? And so I talk about it in the book as developing intensity capacity to be with the intensity of sometimes trauma, intergenerational trauma, pain. The suffering of the world is very real. Yes. And we can't close our hearts and just remain in bliss. But to touch that part of our hearts that can go into our inseparable nature and bliss, we have to move through the pain. It's one of the paradoxes of life, right? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, another adjective, a raspberry. Yes. You know, and I love what you're saying about the practicality of it. That's been a huge quest journey requirement for me if moving through my trauma, because as I believe, nobody wants a Rubik's cube. How can you do a Rubik's cube of psychology or any of that kind of stuff when you're in the muckst of trauma? You just break it down to ABCs, because my brain and nervous system just can't take this.
Right. And there's so much new psychology with neuroscience. I've been doing Corinna for a long time, and I've had to adapt it to the vagal nerve, understanding of trauma and our nervous systems, also understanding attachment theory and how there's certain trauma we can't get at because it happened before we were conscious. And then certain things in our lives happen and suddenly we're back and we're, you know, 3 months old in our mind because things do register in the body, it seems, or body, heart, mind compilation. Mm-hmm. So I've really had to adapt Karuna along the way. And recently we've also been taking on decolonization because we already look at our unconscious biases. And so if we don't include the whole conversation with race and ethnicity and identity into that, then we would be missing a huge conversation of the day. And also just Karuna offers tools to befriend ourselves as we are, which means sometimes we're very ignorant, right? Sometimes we don't know what we don't know. And so there has to be room in our life and the conditions to change and grow. So that's where Karuna comes in, because it gives us a container to really go through a huge growth period.
I love this. I love this, Melissa. It sounds like there is, and going back to your why and that original conversation we were having, there's a mass amount of responsibility and accountability that awareness too.
Yes.
Right. And I talk about educate and teach. The number one thing is you have to start with awareness, because society of denial, burnout, workaholism, whatever the ism is in your life, right?
Right.
You know, based on traumas, based on lifestyle, whatever that is for you. So if you can walk into that awareness, and then somewhere, somehow the teacher will appear, right? And you'll be able to get clear and get that education.
Right. And I think one thing that we're really all dealing with, particularly in Western culture, but at this extreme moment in time globally, is this massive materialism that is hitting us constantly, that we're not okay as we are, that we have to change
right
or do something, and that we have to, you know, adapt ourselves in some way to not be the unique jewel that each of us are. And it's like going in the wrong direction, like we're trying to fix something outside instead of return home to what is our greatest resource, which is this awakened heart, or you say love, to love ourselves and love others. That is such a jewel in us.
Oh, it is. And first and foremost, you know, and I have said this before, and I'm going to go back to the journey of when it all started for me. I mean, it started back in the womb for me. However, as I was in my adult process and my awakening, my awareness, being able to define what love meant feels like to me. I had to search that out.
Because, to receive it, give it, feel it.
Yes. You know, I'm like, well, wait a minute. That's not the love that's sticky. I didn't want to feel that. I mean, I knew that I was loving, but there was a codependency aspect of it because of trauma and all the attachment and
habitual mind. Yeah.
Yeah. Habits of all mind. Of that. Yeah. But my trauma, it kept me safe, right? It kept me safe. And I was very aware of these surroundings, right? But that's going into and finding what love felt like and meant to me. And I wanted to vocalize that, because there's people listening right now saying, well, I don't even know what, and I can remember feeling this almost, there was a shame. I'm like, well, how come I don't know what love feels like?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's really poignant. The thing is, we often confuse, you know, mixed emotions happen all the time. So we confuse love with erotism, and we often think that's love, right? If someone likes me, our worthiness gets caught up in love, or our
welcome to the teenage years, babe.
Right. What have we, but they never go away, right? What have we accomplished in our life that makes us lovable? And we get all kinds of confusions going instead of that potency of heart that is not dependent on anything. That's really
so beautiful. It's so beautiful, so simple, but so big, so big, so powerful, right?
Yeah.
To be able to have that awareness and then to go, okay, you know, what pops into my head, Melissa, is permission. To the people that are listening, you have permission to evolve and change. You don't have to be in the said box, whatever that is for you. Go ahead.
I was going to say that one thing we start with in Karuna that helps us touch that inseparability, or that's what I associate connection with love, that being able to touch our non-duality, we would say in Buddhism, the place where we're not separate. And that happens in nature through the elements, whether that be fire, you know, or water. Often people take baths, right, just habitually, just because it brings them home to their body. Being in the wind, standing in the wind, gardening, putting your hands in the earth, all of these fun cooking, these things that we have to do fundamentally that ground us, they're not for, those are real important experiences. We always think it has to be with a human and we're loved. But, you know, animals serve that purpose as well, right? So, or even a bouquet of flowers, you know, anything that, or the breeze coming through the trees, or the sun rising, or the moon going into its cycles. Just our awareness.
But it's going back to the now, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Going back to that now.
Right. And being able to raise our gaze. Yeah. Raise our gaze and come out and just experience what's happening right now. And so nature is such a good doorway for that.
Oh, my.
So I have a practice. I have a practice of walking without devices, at least for a half an hour a day, just so I can regulate myself and synchronize with the elements. You know, because it's so, we're all so caught up with our technology, which is a wonderful miracle.
I know.
A wonderful miracle, but it's, it
also double-edged sword.
Exactly. Yeah.
It is. Yes. 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 I'm in the process of breaking that habituation myself as well. And one of my favorite things to do, Melissa, and I was doing this, you know, that going out, my thing is nature, the wind. Yeah. You know, when you said that, and the wind in your face, and
yes.
I could go, and I'm outside a lot, and I love it. I love that feeling, the smell of the grass, and taking that moment, that container of the now, and just really being so present and just looking at the beauty and the magic of nature, right?
Yes.
But there is another thing that I have done, because we get into the body habituation too. So what I do when I really need to get into my body and grounded is I take my shoes off, cold, wet, muddy, doesn't matter. And I walk backwards. So it's methodical, and I am in my body, because
you have to pay attention.
Yeah. You have to pay attention, right? Because the habituation is forward. We know how to do that. The body does it without us, right?
Right.
So if you go backwards, and it really, and I've done that with clients too, and there's been tears. Yes, give it a shot. It's actually it's okay. Amazing. I love it. I love it. I would like to, you know what, this seems like a good natural break. We're a couple minutes early from the 8:30 mark, but it seems like a good commercial break. So Benny's, we're going to get that going. And then we're going to still be live on YouTube. So for the audience that's listening, if you want to see us noodling and chatting over on YouTube, just go to YouTube and type in 1150 AM. We will be right back. Sue is here with Clarity with Sue, and we have Melissa Moore, and we are talking about traumas and overcoming traumas and the container of now, the self-love, come home to ourselves as we are. I love that, Melissa. All right, you guys, we'll be right back.
Picture yourself in a boat on a river with tangerine trees and marmalade skies. Somebody calls you.
Hey there, everyone. Sue here with Clarity with Sue. You also know me as the host and creator of the Gratitude Cafe. Please sign up for the newsletter so we can stay in touch. All you got to do is go to claritywithsue.com, sign up for the newsletter. And I am creating vitality, abundance, and resilience. I want you to win in life and to reclaim, rediscover, redesign the authentic and genuine you. If that sounds juicy and yummy, come over, let's have a conversation, sign up for the newsletter and or the coaching program and the C2C live online program. Again, that's claritywithsue.com.
Being hospitalized can be frightening, especially for a child. Here at Encourage Kids, we provide the resources and the funding to bring much-needed reassurance, smiles, and yes, hope to hospitalized kids and their families. I'm Michelle Hall Duncan, President and CEO of Encourage Kids, and I encourage you to learn about our positive and life-altering programs, how we ease the anxiety around hospitalization for every one of our pediatric patients. Join our efforts. Visit encourage-kids.org.
Alternative Talk 1150 is your sports organization's safe bet when it comes to airing your team's games. Our players are all seasoned professionals when it comes to sports programming. Imagine your games being heard on local radio. Your team deserves the MVP treatment. Call 425-653-1150 today to learn how affordable and fun it is to broadcast your games on the radio. Call 425-653-1150 and make your next season something special. That's 425-653-1150.
Alternative Talk 1150. It's good for what ails you. This statement has not been evaluated by the FDA.
Oh, bingo. Bingo, Benny.
Yeah.
Nice work, babe. Thank you.
Really good.
Oh, you're welcome.
That was awesome. He's so good. He is so good. So, Melissa, the diamonds within us.
Let's talk about my book.
Gem of a book. The Diamonds Within Us brings modern context to the ancient Tibetan Buddhist teachings. The lessons within this book aim to help readers discover how to better integrate their human experience to live more empowered lives. Melissa reveals how to befriend yourself as you are. We were briefly talking about that at the top of the hour. Access the wisdom of emotions, embody deep listening skills, and resource yourself when working with others. Ooh, I like that. Resource yourself. When working
right.
with others.
Ooh, we're going we to call it.
Go ahead.
Good. We call it mutual recovery.
Ooh.
So that we're not, you know, I uncoupled originally this, I learned and was trained as a therapist, which I was very unhappy with when I went into that. I worked with women with eating disorders and I tripped into the misogyny of the psychological world and was really unhappy with the model, and I didn't see people getting better. I saw people using diagnosis to make themselves worse. I think the field has moved a lot since when I was practicing therapy. However,
thank goodness.
I didn't want to do that. I wanted to work in groups and I wanted us to empower ourselves. So we practice something called compassionate exchange, which is a way of holding. You can do it in a nanosecond, just if you met someone at the grocery store, even how you hold not only your own basic sanity present, but that can evoke the basic sanity in others. That's the crux of contemplative psychology, is that how we interact with people actually has a huge effect on them and ourselves.
And energetically too, there's a whole exchange happening.
Right. And we call it exchange. And,
okay.
we study how exchange is like 90% of the conversation. We might be saying words, but there's a whole feeling going on underneath. And that exchange, those feelings are as important and often not made conscious or even spoken out. And so we want to bring that material conscious and speak it out when it's possible. And that's called compassionate exchange work. And that allows for both parties, whether one is holding the container as a compassionate friend or the other person, you know, it's a relationship of equals. It's not a hierarchy of one has all the knowledge and the other one is there to get help. It's much more a model of equality and honesty and depth. And that we can bring that out with one another.
Within one another, because you've got to, and Melissa, I talk about that safe container, because I know for myself, if I don't feel safe emotionally, physically, energetically, intimately, whatever it is, it's not happening.
Right.
This is not happening. Right.
Right.
And to be able to provide, and I've had conversations with colleagues and other people, and I'd love to just noodle this with you if we could. If you are in a situation, you know, your external world right now is in chaos and you do not feel safe. You've got to be able to, again, to be in the now, like you were talking about, and coming to the container within self-love of yourself, right?
Right. And be able to set a boundary if you don't feel safe.
If you don't feel
safe. You know, that's being present enough to know that you're in a precarious situation and how to set boundaries. People who have deep trauma or even intergenerational trauma bring that knowledge in their body. They're constantly feeling into the environment, safe, unsafe, or neutral, right?
Yep.
That's going on for everyone, exaggerated in some more than others, right?
Yeah. And then it's that nervous system going, something bad's gonna happen. Oh my God, I gotta find it. And then guess what?
Right.
something bad typically
right
does.
Sometimes inviting it. Yes.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Yeah.
But learning how to utilize that unspoken exchange that we have with our world and with each other, how to bring that out, because that's the material that we make projections on others too. Like we get up in the morning and we feel, especially with the people we love the most, it's very habitual, right? And somebody that we work with or somebody that we live with is kind of in a bad mood, and we feel it, right? We feel it instantly before we even walk outside the door. We can feel it. And then we make things up. They don't like me. They're mad at me. That's where all that material comes from. Instead of, hey, you know, it feels kind of weird in here. What's happening? You know, just a simple question, you know, or a simple respect, and not just personalizing everything, right? Sometimes we just take on everything.
Coming from a place of compassion, this was a download. You may love this, may not, but I love it. It's the CCs in life, compassionate curiosity. In that nows of the moment, have compassion and just get curious, because when you're curious and compassionate, you don't have that angst, right? Energetically, curious like a kid, not so much in that, but you know what I'm saying, right?
Yeah.
Getting really curious and compassionate within that situation instead of defensive or defending, right? Projecting,
right.
Making things up. Or you could even say, hey, this felt weird to me. Am I making this up? You know, just really getting good with the communication. You called it something earlier. I forget. It was cultivating or compassionate exchange. Is that the same?
Yeah. Compassionate exchange. So compassion is interesting because from a Buddhist perspective, I mean, the words now, self-compassion, and those words are very popular, but there's another word in Buddhism that we use to distinguish compassion, and that is the word Maitri. We don't have a translation for it, but it means loving kindness towards yourself and others. That loving kindness is what we want to evoke. Compassion is an automatic that comes, and it is the capacity to feel the pain of other. Compassion is always focused on other, but leave it to Americans to make it into a self project. It's from a Buddhist perspective, it's not about self. It comes out of selflessness, that you're open enough that you truly feel the suffering of others. That's a very compassionate thing to do. To
is
bear
that the
witness.
Same as empathy? Like,
well, empathy, there's still
empathic.
Right. Empathy, there's still, I'm here and I can empathically feel what's happening for you, but compassion is you're there. So for example, if a homeless person asks you for money and you give them, most of the time we give people money if we do out of sympathy because we feel bad. We have more, they have less. There's a hierarchy there. But compassion would be, we feel our own homelessness. We know it and we touch it. And so when we offer, it's like really coming from a place of knowing and not being better than. And that's really hard to go there because we don't want to touch the homelessness in us, right? We all have that. We're not separate from that. We're all very literally connected to the homeless problem. We're very interconnected with it, with our consumerism and the way that we live our lives. But we can't, you know, theoretically remove from that. But to go there and to really, that's true compassion. And it's very rare because, so that word, I'm in a resurrection of the word compassion phase in my life.
I love it. No, bring it on, Melissa. I have a question then. Do you feel or think or whatever the word is, that when you are a product of trauma, regardless of that you have a more heightened ability to be compassionate. I know you're unpacking it, but
I think
I say that because
when you're,
go ahead.
Yeah, I think when you're traumatized, that there's a sensitivity to pain that is like a barometer, and it's almost like we magnetize that to us because there's also, we make a bed out of that, right? We have a place in us for that. And some people make an entire life career out of it, right? You don't want to go in that direction I mean, I've met so many. That's what I didn't like about the psychological field, that I felt like it was cultivating a path of illness.
Yes.
And I'm not, and mental health is really real, but it's, you know, our diagnoses and our states of mind. I worked crisis for many years. And even when people are floridly psychotic, there's windows of clarity, because mind is not static. It has many holes in it. So touching into the present moment, that basic sanity through compassionate exchange, can presence a moment, a window of clarity. And I worked crisis for many years and I loved it, because humans are fascinatingly awake. And my teacher, Ed Podthol, who started the Naropa Contemplative Psychology Program, originally, they've changed the name of the book, but his original title of the book was called he called it The Seduction of Madness. The Seduction of Madness. And that's a very, you know, that there's
that says
a,
it all that, right there though.
Yes, it does. And that he talked about, like, you know, we, and he studied this, and we studied it at Naropa. We studied the nature of mind. And from a Buddhist perspective, it's hard to believe that people would go in that direction out of choice. It isn't conscious choice. It's habitual choice, right?
That iceberg effect, the on.
His name is.
And he says that Seduction of Madness, Revolutionary Insight into the World of Psychosis, and a Compassionate Approach to Recovery at Home. Thank you, Benny. Yes.
Yeah, and that's Ed Podvil. He's no longer living, but he was my mentor. And he was very radical. I mean, he used to slam his finger, and it really had a huge effect on me. I think it's why the therapeutic world didn't work out for me, because he was constantly saying, psychosis is curable. Psychosis is curable. Don't buy it. And of course, in the 70s, it was like, once you have psychosis and you're diagnosed, you're down the rabbit hole, you're gone. Well, that's true in the mental health system that we have. So it's very powerful to understand what I'm not being frivolous about this state of mind, because these are real problematic, habituated states that are very scary. And he founded something called the Wind Horse Project, which you can also Google. And it is a kind of therapeutic approach that uses contemplative psychotherapy. And they create environments of sanity and live with the clients to evoke sanity round the clock.
Ooh, creating new neural pathways.
Right, called through basic attendance in the present moment. Cooking, gardening, living together.
Yes.
Yes, and it's hugely successful. But it's hugely expensive in the domain of the world that we have now. But if we really understood it, it would mean that we would treat these kind of pathologies, as we call them, very differently.
Yep.
We would bring them into our home and we would reorient, you know. But anyway, so he was very radical, and that went deep inside me. And I worked crisis for several years, front lines with police attendants. And you can always find this glimmer of sanity in people's hearts if you're present and fearless enough. It takes a lot of intensity.
I agree with you. Intensity capacity and massive now, right? That
massive heart and now.
Heart and now.
Yeah. And most of the time we're afraid, you know, when we see out of control behavior, we get afraid, right? So we lock up and distance. Yep.
And you can have an open heart with boundaries too, keeping yourself safe, your body.
That's right. Yeah. And you have to set boundaries sometimes, of course. Right.
Well, and
violence.
With violence, but also, you know, in the realm of the special needs, which I absolutely adore and love.
Yes.
You have to make very clear boundaries, because there's touching, because, you know, they love to touch, or they don't, vice versa. So you got to have that communication. Okay. we're going on a rabbit hole of that, but I want to get back. But I love it because I can just keep talking. Melissa, we have got to talk about diamonds, the diamonds within us. Let's break that down. Your beautiful book.
Okay. Well, one of the great things about the book is, and
all the great things.
Well, one of the things that's very, very unique about contemplative psychology that's you don't find other places is the five Buddha families. So the five Buddha families is an ancient mandala of wisdom and confusion. And it breaks the world apart into, on the outer aspect, it's the elements of space, water, earth, fire, and wind. And on the inner aspect, it is the emotions of passion, aggression, ignorance, pride, and jealousy, and all the various variations in that. And then on the, there's wisdoms that are associated with each of these confused states of emotion. And these all intermix, and there's, you know, thousands of variations on the theme. But we have a practice in Karuna where we actually lay in different postures designed to evoke the energies of that family. And we either wear glasses that are a particular color, or we lie in rooms that are designed in a certain shape. And that evokes in our being a kind of solidified aspect of that part of our mind and personality. And then when we're in a community, we really see the variations on the theme, how that comes out. So we study energy, not just the neurotic, like anger is this, but without anger, we study the wisdom of it, which is clear seeing. Because wisdom is a head, anger is a head thing. And usually when we're angry about something, we get in our head and we begin justifying and adding fuel to the fire. We're right, right? We're right. And we keep running the story. We're right. We're right.
And we're hyper-focused on that one thing.
Right.
Yeah, fear is focus, baby.
Right. But instead of dropping out of that, all that mental activity and into the body, into the present moment, and understanding that clear seeing, that we're seeing clearly, but we may not be reacting because we're so invested in being right, right? We're not seeing the whole perspective. So Maitri space awareness allows us to kind of intensify each of these the Buddha, the white energy, the space energy is in the middle. That's where everything arises and dissolves. And all the four families are directional. And so we actually explore this mandala several times in the community by doing this practice, and also through our relationships and how the energy comes out in our own life. So we take apart these emotions. A lot of times, like, who wants to ever own jealousy, right? Well, we're constantly, jealousy and envy is just a comparative mind. And we're trained in comparative mind. If you're not comparing, you're not able to do it better next time. So it's not negative.
Right. It's contrast,
It's co-emergent. It has a both and. It's a both and quality to the process. And so learning to trust energy, learning to trust our emotions, learning to move close to the energy so that they can teach us, because they're there for a reason, not to be suppressed or to be acted out, but to be felt fully as they are. And that's hard to do. That takes a lot of training to get out of the head and into the body. Mm-hmm. So that's why we take so much time in Karuna, because it's unbelievably habitual to want to get away from those emotions we don't want to feel.
Of course, because, and you know, I layman it because it's so much easier to understand. You know, it's the nervous system just going, I'm going to keep you right here.
Right.
I've known this. This is the safe zone. And
right.
when I've had conversation there with other people, they're like, well, oh my God, but it just feels so different. I don't want to do it. I'm like, yeah, you do. That's what you, because you want it to feel different, because you want it to change.
Right. Well, and the nature of emotional energy is that it's constantly dynamic.
Yeah.
It's only when we dam it up by saying, I'm fine. We dam it up.
Or we
act it out, which is like adding fuel to the fire, right? Like I really like to do that when I'm driving, actually.
Unpack that for me. What?
Well, like when you're driving and you're in your car and then somebody's kind of an idiot or something. I think it's a California habit. And then I just, you know, your car is the body, right? And
yes.
Then suddenly you can get really pissed inside your car.
Yeah.
That's like feeding fuel. That's like feeding the energy, right?
Yeah.
It feels good. It's fun.
Well, you have there's a chemical release, right?
Yeah.
We could have that conversation.
Yeah.
The whole chemical release. Yeah.
Right. But it's very interesting because I also realized, you know, I had this horrible commute from Petaluma to San Francisco for many, many years. And I was in trauma from the traffic. I mean, I don't use that lightly because it was like I was so, and then I realized it was because I was adding so much fuel to the fire. And I learned, like I took a year to just let everybody in. Let everybody in. Just what happens if you just chill all the way? Let everybody in. Let everybody go first. It didn't cost me a minute. And it was like a night and day effect. I just say that to anyone who might be commuting right now.
Right now. Well, I think that's a great example. Totally a great example.
You know,
you can never go fast enough to hurt or kill anybody. So slow down, including yourself, right?
Yeah.
Really? Right. I mean, it's just the emotions. It's okay. Take some nice, big, deep inhales and exhales and just relax. Absolutely. And then that's, you know, an analogy for all of life, right? In the now, but specifically, you know, using the example of the car is perfect because we've all been there.
But the diamonds within us has to do with these jewels within us of the five Buddha families each have wisdoms. They're clear seeing and equanimity and discernment, the capacity to discern what to accept.
Discernment? Yeah.
Yes, it's a big one. All accomplishing, which is like relaxation in getting our work done and not pushing over the limit, or just space, just the capacity to have space. But discernment is huge. Discernment, you know, knowing what to accept and what to reject, that's our life teaching, right?
Yep.
That wisdom to know is
there. That discernment, right? And I've had this conversation, that discernment is purely just an opportunity for you to figure out what you want to do it or like it or you don't. And having a space or an energy that you can say, it's just discernment. I'm just figuring it out versus going down the rabbit hole of shame and, oh my God, I could have done this or, you know.
Well, people get paralyzed sometimes with making decisions, don't they?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Or choosing, having to choose. But really, we're choosing all the time. It's sort of like the little like button on Facebook, right? Like, dislike, like, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's that kind of stuff. Like, I like that. Or when we're looking through a catalog, we like that, right? That capacity of mind. But when it comes to like life decisions, so discernment is really huge because it's how we know when to set a boundary, how we know when to walk away, how we know when to go further. It's huge. Very,
yes.
Very.
And when you don't trust yourself based on trauma and past, you had talked about that in the teachings. Going back to, and I know this in myself, and I've had conversations with other people as well. It's how do I trust myself again? How do I do that? Because I've made all these external choices based on the traumas, right?
So exactly. And I think trust has to do with befriending ourselves. You know, making friends with ourselves as we are.
Home
like,
to ourselves as we are. Yeah.
And forgiving ourselves. Like, I mean.
Oh, that's a huge one.
Right. And that has to do, it really isn't a head thing. It's visceral. Like how, it has to do with how we treat ourselves, how we feed ourselves, how we let ourselves sleep, how we organize our day. Everything comes back to discernment, right?
Discernment, yeah.
They're all interconnected.
It mm-hmm. is. It is absolutely very much so. And getting clear on who you are and how you want to show up. That's been my thing, you know.
Has
how,
it?
Always, because the trauma had described who I was and how I was behaving and acting, right?
Right.
We can all relate to that.
Right.
And then I'm like, yeah, that's not, that doesn't feel right. That's not working for me anymore. And then I had to figure out what love meant to me, what it felt like to me.
Uh-huh.
And there was an evolution of that. So my first, you know, the awareness and then getting really clear on who
yeah,
I
clarity.
Was. Clarity, right? That's why I bring all of this on here, because clarity is so important.
It is
the fuel to all of your desires.
Where do you think clarity comes from? I mean, how do you know clarity?
Tell me.
I know you. I'm asking you. Where do you think? How do you know clarity?
How do I know clarity? I can say for myself when it, and then you know what? Discernment pops back into my head because I have had to make discerning choices and got really clear on how I'm choosing to show up in the world with myself. And if I'm not in, and two anchor words, you know, we were talking about grounding earlier. For me, thank you, Benny. We got 5 minutes. For me, it's, is this authentic and genuine to me now?
So you come home to yourself. You come
home,
right?
You see where my hands are. I mean, I go to my heart. Yeah.
Yeah.
I come home to myself, like you're saying, and I have that clarity. Is it authentic and genuine to me? And if it's not, no, if I'm learning from it, okay. You know, swipe left.
Yeah. For myself, I mean, I have to make a lot of decisions because I run the business. I steward Karuna Training, and it's really hard these days with everything that's going on besides the costs, but just the world. And I've tried to go to an online model. I'm not happy. I want in-person awareness. And
I am with you on that. Absolutely with you.
And so what I've learned is when I don't know what to do, do nothing but stay awake. Like, don't just put it off the burner, but stay with it and be with the discomfort of not knowing what to do. Like, let it work on you in a certain kind of way. Like, I'm trying to decide.
But don't go down the rabbit hole of the.
Right. Just stay with not knowing. Just stay in that discomfort of not knowing what to do. Because I had to teach myself that, because I'm someone who's very quick to make a decision. You know, I'm going to choose this. I'm going to handle this now.
Yeah. Yeah.
That isn't the right way. You know, that's habitual for me. That's like a flight. But to stay in the discomfort and hold back and just kind of feel like I'm going through that right now with my next Karuna cohort. I'm trying to figure out how to make it present and affordable and all of that. So I don't have it posted on my website yet, but please stay tuned, everybody. If you're interested at karunatraining.com, you can look at our program, and then you can see pretty soon we'll be posting new cohort information in Colorado.
In Colorado, yes. You know, Melissa, you'd asked how I get clear, and you know, sometimes none of that works. None of it works, and I just go meditate or I go take a nap. I just literally, you know, I've done all the stuff, you know, I've sat with it. I've, you know, all the checklists, right? And I'm like, okay, no, you know what? Nah, I'm going to just go lay down. Let it go. And then I come back and sure enough, I got a full download when I'm back up again.
Yeah. And that's the power of space. Space
is
so pregnant with wisdom, but we're not a space oriented culture.
No, we got to control it or we got to, if you're not in the now, you're either fearing from the past or trying, you know, all that, or you're looking at the future, trying to control the ifs, the whats, and the should. I call it, I just shoulda, coulda, woulda all over myself. All right, you guys, I know we've got just a couple more minutes. Melissa, this has been absolutely wonderful. Melissa's latest book, The Diamonds Within Us. You've got to pick this up. It's absolutely a delightful little gem. I'm going to spell out the website so they can go to you. I will have all this stuff on the web, on my website. So if you guys are driving, you know where to find me. It's KarunaTraining. KarunaTraining.com. And you can get all that contact information there. Get on the newsletter, get all those good, juicy stuff. They can get the book
on Amazon. On Amazon. Also, okay. It's on Audible. If people want to hear it, it's also on Audible. Ooh, I did that last year. Yeah.
Oh, congratulations. I didn't know that. That's my number way go-to is Audible. So that's it. I love that. Melissa, thank you. Thank you. I say thank you, it's full of love, gratitude, and seeing you in the rink. You know, Brene Brown talks about that, you know, in the rink. And I love Brene Brown too, the work that she's doing. And I see you in that rink and I see you.
Thank you.
And I honor that. And thank you so much.
I see you too, Sue. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
I do too. I'm so happy to meet you and have this moment of clarity with you. Thank you.
Oh, thank you very much. Likewise. And I love this training. I love that. Come home to ourselves as we are, right? I love that. And first you got to get clear on what that looks like. And then the discernment and all the other stuff, right? All right, we got to go. Melissa, thank you. Benny, thank you so much. To all of you, each of you are a gift. Get out there and share yourself with the world.